Our guest today is Paul Hollis, writer of the Hollow Man series. Paul is an American author of fictional terrorism and espionage. His best-selling and multi-award-winning novels, The Hollow Man series, follow a U.S. government analyst and a trilogy of suspense across Europe. The inspiration for his storylines comes from a series of true incidents that occurred during the 1970s and perhaps continue today. Valuable and free information from experts are contained in these short 7 to 15 minute podcasts. We want to help people understand the various end time threats and provide real time solutions along with the tools needed for their friends, families, and businesses to survive. Followers of our channel can receive a free action guide on each topic weekly. We hope that these guides will help people prepare for the serious threats we all face at this time in history. Hi, this is John White with The Worldwide Threat. Today we're going to talk about extreme terrorism in the lives of people with Paul Hollis. And he's going to describe what happened in years past and how this maybe affects today. And so today I'd like to welcome Paul to our podcast and talk about extreme terrorism. How are you doing today, Paul?
I'm doing great. Thank you, John, for giving me the opportunity to speak with your listeners.
This is really cool because it's not often that we get to meet people that have traveled as much as you do and the great credentials you have and the material you've written. But I have one question to start with, which is basically what kind of happened in your life to inspire you in the first place to get involved the way you did in the in understanding terrorism?
My whole life I've always thought that showing up is like 80% of the game, you know, so I've tried to show up and do whatever I wanted to, basically. But I majored in staying out of Vietnam in college. So right after that, within a year or so, I joined the Peace Corps and got the opportunity to go to East Africa in a place called Tanzania. There, I actually met a fellow who really thought I was wasting my time digging latrines in East Africa for the Peace Corps, and he had a better offer for me. So that is how I ended up in Europe the first time, is that he wanted me to learn as much as I could about terrorism at the time, and go from there. And so I was basically a tourist until he needed me, not get out of the concept of me being any sort of a spy or anything like that. I was more like a red shirt guy in a Star Trek episode. The term that comes to mind is expendable.
So you're expendable.
Absolutely. I didn't know or think about it at the time, but yeah, that was it. Cause I was off books. Nobody knew where I was or anything like that. So it's an interesting time. So that's how I got to Europe the first time.
What years was that roughly? What time of in history?
That was from mid 1973 to 1976, sometime earlier in the year, but about 3 years or so.
At the end of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, right? At the end. Yeah, yeah. It was still going on.
But did that influence what was going on over in Europe as well?
It did in certain ways. What was really happening? Let me give you a little background on that. The terrorism at the time was on the rise in Europe, especially in other places, but not so much in the United States here. So, what I was, as I said, I was assigned to learn as much as I could about it. Most terrorism in those days, most acts of terrorism, were specific, personal. Damage was focused on a distinct, definable enemy. Terrorism was beginning to, basically change its strategy from that kind of a thing to more familiar, senseless chaos that we are recognize today, basically. So the death of a political figure, let's say, no longer really mattered to these people because they found out that by committing terrorist acts against innocent people, our children, you know, basically the targets of innocence there became preferable to these people, because it really hit the hearts of us much more, of course, and the fear inside of us, you know, grew with each one of those incidents while I was in Europe. But America basically wanted to know if this was at all coming to our shores, and if it was, how soon. So that was really the whole premise of what I was doing there, is basically trying to research, follow people, confirming that rumors were true in some cases, and if they were, I would turn it over to experts who would resolve the situation. And let's not leave that three-letter acronym out there, but that's what the story was about.
Like an intelligence operation trying to figure it out, right? That basically
it was really in the days when, I don't know if I can say this, but where the NSA were saying that they did not have boots on the ground, and it was because they could say that because they had expendable people like me on the ground, you know, taking money for researching in libraries and following people and using disguises of all kinds of nature, because once they see you, they know who you are. So then I had to I had to use disguises of all kinds to stop being killed. I wore dreadlocks and hippie outfits at the time, and I had, in those days I had blonde hair, not gray so much, but I had to I changed the color of my hair by a couple of different methods depending on what I had, but coffee grounds would do it, you know, to darken it up a little bit. And actually the liquid shoe polish back in the day, you could use that and wash your hair with that, and it came out kind of brilliantly silvery, shiny kind of a thing. And so you had to keep washing until it got down to the color that you wanted. But
yeah, you're like a Mission Impossible guy.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't exactly call it that. And in fact, it's my stories are not just another story about Jason Bourne and Jack Ryan. They're really more about, as I said, a clueless kind of a guy that just sort of part of it was bumbling that I wasn't killed, and part of it was some of the friends that I had made there, you know, they protected me and that sort of thing. But it was a much less complicated world than it is today, I think, in some of those activities. So.
Please share with us what really led you to write the books, the Hollow Man series, and why is it called the Hollow Man series?
What led me to write the books in the first place was that my son has been a lifelong gymnast, and what the parents would do would be take the kids to the gym, and they had 4-hour practice, and so we went to the local pub and, you know, drank and told stories and all that. And one doctor friend of mine, lady, she said, "You should write this down." And I said, "I don't know." And she says, "Well, what else do you have to do? You're retired. You know, what are you going to do?" And I said, "Oh, okay, challenge accepted." And as it turned out, I got more and more into it, and it was bringing back memories and things like that, and that's where that came from. But the Hollow Man part was a feeling that I had at the time, that I was just kind of empty inside. I didn't really consider myself to have a spine or a brain or muscles or anything like that. It was just a guy that was trying to stay alive in a situation that I sort of put myself into, volunteered, I guess, you know. But it was, you know, when you're 25, you don't expect to live till you're 30 anyway, back then, right? Now you do. But back then it was like, oh my God, that's so old, you know, and it's like, I won't live to be that long anyway, so I might as well take advantage of it now. But without training and without any sort of self-reliance or self-esteem, maybe is a good way to put it, I felt hollow inside, is that there was nothing. I didn't have a feeling inside that there was something there that would help me survive in any way or anything of that sort. So that's where the original title came from.
I don't think people these days even understand the concepts that you're talking about like that, because of social media and everything else, where you were on your own, weren't you?
Yeah, there were no cell phones. There was no computer networking at that time. You know, it was all like everything was separate, and everything was in fact, if you wanted to look at someone in the past, you'd have to look at microfiche in the libraries, and your younger guys won't even know what that is. But it's
right.
was a kind of a manual internet at the time.
How would you relate all that experience to what you were talking about a little bit, how terrorism kind of changed during that time? How would you relate that kind of terrorism to then in your life and what it looks like today for people that are dealing with everything from 9/11 to false flags to what's next, people putting on the internet the next nuke bomb's coming? How would you relate those concepts?
Well, back then, we expected and really honored that news agencies were honest and telling you just the news without opinion, right? And it was before some of the networks now have said, well, we're not giving you the news, we're giving you our opinion of it, and a lot of people, I don't think today understand the difference. But back then it was, if it was in the newspapers or pretty much on TV, like Walter Cronkite or that sort of thing, people sort of believed it, you know, and so there was not that the overshadowing of so much misinformation, although I definitely can tell you that there was some misinformation out there. But as far as the people that I was following and investigating, they were, there was only one attitude again about them from Western civilization kind of outlook. And actually they weren't, you know, I didn't mean to say that they're all Middle Eastern terrorists. They were definitely terrorists in the Western Europe arena, as per the IRA and in Ireland and the French had their share, and so did the Spanish, etc. So, but there wasn't so much of a question of is this true or not. It was easy to sort of look through some of that stuff to say, this is impossible. And in my situation, if I thought it was impossible, I'd go try it and see if it was true or not. And that got me into a lot more situations than a normal analyst would have been in, because I just couldn't let things go at that time without knowing an answer, sort of thing. But it turns out that most of the people in Europe, Asia, wherever I was at, are just normal people, and they just want the same thing that everybody wants, you know, just peace and a hope for a better life, and you know, those kinds of things. So
with that vast experience in your life, and now you roll this thing forward from the 70s, what do you think would be a good word just to give them peace?
Well, I honestly think that there are more threats these days than honest cheer positivity that's going around. So, you know, what you have to do is you want to be able to understand what's being said, how to say it. What I would say that the most important thing is that to look beyond my experiences back then and look at you know, the people that are in these worlds. Use my books, in fact, as a kind of a jumping off point to sort of see the world and go beyond just what's in the books. And you relied on your friends, you relied on the news people and that sort of thing, which is hard to do these days. But But I would say, you know, get your news sources from multiple places, not just leaning left, leaning right, any of that sort of thing. Just get and look for verification more than like duplicity. Look for duplicity to get to a point where you can see people, not just in your own country, as human beings, you know, that you want to see the world that way, even from your enemies and our perceived enemies at today, because they may not be so tomorrow or vice versa, right? So it's a hard world to live in today.
Yeah, and so that, you know, to give people peace, what you're talking about is, I think it's a good word to say, instead of just assuming everything that comes across the internet is gospel, to cross-reference things and look at different concepts so they can analyze what's going on. Because technology with AI and everything else, and we're going to talk about that one of our future shows, is easily manipulated. And so I appreciate you taking the time to share your wisdom with us today. And we look forward to pointing people to your book so they can get that history.
Thanks for having me, John. It's been a pleasure.
Bye, Paul. I hope you're blessed with this information. Please like, subscribe, and click on the notification tab to our channel, and we will send you advanced notices about upcoming threats to be discussed. Remember to capture the free action guides via our QR code embedded in the episode at the end. As a registered follower of the Worldwide Threat Podcast, you have our permission to download and share every episode and free action guide with your friends, family, and other businesses. Each Thursday, we'll post a new subject for you to consider and discuss. Set your watch to watch and to download the free action guide. Thank you. This is John White, the host of the Worldwide Threat Podcast. Please check out everything we're doing, and blessings to you and your family.